I'd like to thank the organizer for invitation to this nice workshop. And well, this is going to be a discussion time or something, rather than a standard 1 hour and a half chalkboard or PowerPoint slide seminar, something like that. And the actually, this title, Guts and Strength, is not the title that I made up by myself, but actually this title was given by Ralph to me. And there were several requests to me. The purpose, first thing to do is to talk some kind of perspective that I had in the work that started with the Radu Tatar in 2006. Certainly, actually, I counted all the papers that I've written since then, and actually there are 11 of them. And basically, most of those papers, some of them are rather phenomenological, some of them are theoretical, actually almost along the line of the paper that started in the paper with the Radu in 2006. So, first thing to do, what I'm expected to do is to talk about the perspective of my thoughts behind those series of works. And the other thing is, well, hopefully to propose some questions or problems to the future to the audience. And the other request to me is to add a phenomenological flavor because of my background that I started in phenomenology model building before I came into the business of string phenomenology. And certainly this makes sense because in this work series of workshop, we also had an F-theory focus week and plenty of works covered mathematical or string theory aspect of the F-theory quantifications. So what I'm expected to do is to add some kind of phenomenology flavor, I think. So that's all the requests that I had, so I try to meet the expectation. And so let me try. And but this is a little broad subject, guts and strings in general. So I would like to add an adjective, which is supersymmetry gut. Perhaps, well, gut is motivated very well in combination with the supersymmetry because of gauge coupling unification. Certainly, in principle, we can talk about grand unified theory without supersymmetry. The gauge coupling unification is not that precise, but still, we might be able to manage the difference between the gauge coupling constant by threshold corrections, but I'm not going to talk about that, certainly because, partly because I have nothing to talk about that in non-supersymmetry quantifications. So, this is a subject. And I've prepared basically three different subjects to talk about or to discuss with you. And one is cosmology, and the other is summary of landscapes at this moment. So it's kind of, well, status summary of landscape in. And the other is physics-oriented open programs in F-theory quantification. So I'm not planning to cover mathematical aspects of F-theory quantifications or string duality aspect of F-theory quantifications. Certainly that's a very interesting subject and I'm also very much interested in, but I do not plan to cover that kind of subjects in this talk or discussion section. But after finishing the preparation of this talk, I realized that that's too much for 1 hour and a half. So probably I have to cut one of the three categories. I don't know, well, do you have any special requests which one has to be cut?
Not the third one.
Not the third one.
Cut the middle.
Cut the middle. Okay. So I'll proceed in the order from this and this and that. If some time is left, then I'll go to that section. So let me go to cosmology first. By the way, two people voice their opinions, but they're experts in F-theory. So that may be a little bit biased opinion, but maybe. Anyway.
Don't cut the third one.
I see. Okay. Before I started to work on particle physics application of string phenomenology in general, I worked on Dibre inflation using D3-D7 for hybrid inflation. But at some point around 2004, I began to be interested in particle physics application and started to work with Radu Tatar. And at that time, both Radu and I were postdocs at Berkeley. And so I stopped paying attention, or I didn't have any time to pay close attention to cosmology progress anymore since then. So actually, my knowledge in string application to cosmology is frozen at the time of 2004. So I suppose the audience will keep me updated. I hope so. And I want to make two remarks in this context.
You hope this one would be canceled.
I'm sorry?
You were hoping this one would be canceled.
We had a whole week on that,
so maybe you know what we did. Different people have different opinion. I just want to make two remarks. I don't know whether two remarks are covered by other people. So if you begin to think that what I'm going to say is covered by only covered by other people, then please say stop and proceed to other subjects. So one thing that I want to mention is a tension between two things in supersymmetry compactifications in string theory. Tension is in between supersymmetric compactification and high-scale inflation. That's basically what was pointed out by a paper by Kalosh and Linde in 2004, I think. Was it covered? I see. Then I can skip it.
No, go ahead.
So the basic idea is that, let's think about the moduli stabilization, especially the Kähler moduli stabilization. Then a scalar potential usually looks like that, at least in the language for the effective field theory. And for generic compactification and the moduli stabilization, the Kähler moduli, and then the potential height is something like Suzy breaking scale to the fourth. So if we assume low-energy supersymmetry compactification, and assuming that a supersymmetry is maintained at least in the visible sector down to the electric scale, something like that, and then the supersymmetry breaking scale is bounded from above by around 10 to the 10th GeV, or maybe a little higher, 10 to the 11th GeV, but not more than that. So there is an upper limit on the potential height for the volume stabilization. But on the other hand, we have a certain guess of the energy scale of inflation. The Corby normalization has been measured in a long time ago, and its rough expression is its value is something like 10 to the minus 5. And on the other hand, the theoretical expression for this is, roughly speaking, energy scale over the Planck scale squared multiplied by 1 over square root of epsilon, and epsilon is the slower parameter. So unless we fine-tune the theory or to find a very flat potential, and then we have a rough guess of the typical energy scale during inflation. And so since 10 to the minus 5 tells us the ratio between the energy scale to the Planck scale, and since this is not very small, the typical energy scale of inflation is not much lower below the Planck scale. It's very high energy scale. So natural expectation is that actually, this energy scale is higher than this. What does it mean? Actually, that's very puzzling to me. And I have nothing more to add, to this situation. At least my knowledge is frozen at the time, 2004.
But this is valid only in the very simplest KKLT type models. I mean, this is not a generic situation at all. I mean, this idea that the height of the potential is the Suzy breaking scale.
Do you need fine-tuning or parameters to get the potential very high?
You always need fine-tuning, but...
This is based on a very particular scenario.
Yeah.
For modular stabilization, I think. So it's an open question, but I think I agree with Shanta that it's not necessarily a generic statement. It's just a statement on the part of the landscape that's been studied.
Didn't
Kaepernick
and
Linde
try to argue it was more general, or was it really just
detailed? I think they just took their
KKLT demo. For example, if things like metric fluxes come in and turn KKLT more like GKLT. So like the two kinds of modular or thinning.
That's hard to control so far.
Also, I thought that this was only the F term part, right? If you add the B term, which is zero at the minimum, but once you deviate from the minimum, okay, goes up really, really fast. There is no exponential suppression in the deep term.
At this moment, are there different, so this may not be generic, are there a good way to have some kind of overall picture? What kind of, for example, in other words, can we take that argument as an indication which way to go, what kind of quantification we should consider, or rather than a case-by-case story? No more comments.
Also, I mean, are there some models where you have late time moduli decaying and they generate part of the CMD, sort of the curvaton type models? So this the scale of inflation can be completely decoupled from
Corby normalization.
Yeah.
That's true. In that case, well, perhaps we have to think about how to realize curvaton model or things like that, but that's certainly one of the areas in quite interesting phenomenology. Okay, that's one thing. And the other is about moduli problem. And well, when string theorists and phenomenologists say moduli problem, usually they refer to different things. Well, when string theorists say moduli problem, probably usually it is about how to stabilize moduli potential and how to realize the minimized value of the moduli field to be the one that we want to have. That's usually what string theorists call moduli problem. But phenomenologists have also different meanings in moduli problem. And what they care is to get masses of the moduli field sufficiently high. And the other is to follow the evolution of the moduli field. Well, if moduli particles are produced in thermal, in a thermal history of the universe, especially after inflation, and then once they're created, then they will eventually decay, or they're expected to decay, or otherwise they're supposed to be a dark matter candidate, or something like that. Well, if they're decaying, and then its lifetime can be measured, calculated theoretically, and if it can decay to visible sector particles through operators that is suppressed by Planck scale, and then typical estimate of the decay rate is mass cubed over Planck scale squared. And so it sets the time scale of the moduli particle decay. And so phenomenology constraint from Big Bang nuclear synthesis is that mass parameter is preferred to be larger than 100 TeV. So complex structure moduli is stabilized in flux quantification type 2b or F theory, for example. And in that case, the mass scale is very high. So that's very safe. A problem this may not be generic. So maybe, for example, in KKLT type, for example, the KLM moduli typically have masses of the order of the gravitino mass. So it could be around 100 TeV, maybe a little bit higher, TeV, 10 TeV. But it's a little bit of tension between this phenomenology bound. And the other issue is that is about the evolution. Even if moduli particles decay early enough, before the epoch of Big Bang nuclear synthesis, and yet if so much energy was once stored in moduli particle, and then it would dilute baryon symmetry, and so it's not going to lead to a successful cosmological scenario. So for phenomenologists, what's important is to make an estimate of how much energy density is once stored in moduli particles. For example, during inflation, the potential minimum may have been shifted from the minimum of the moduli particle that we see today, and then the valve of the moduli particle will begin to move after the inflation energy has gone away. And then moduli field begins to roll down, and then enormous amount of energy will be released. The typical estimate of the energy scale, energy density in the moduli sector is something like a moduli mass, which may be TeV or weak scale, and squared, and the amplitude of the scalar field oscillation is usually Planck scale. So the energy density is weak scale squared times Planck scale squared, and that's usually very huge. So the following the evolution of the energy density moduli field is very important subject in particle cosmology. And what phenomenologists can say is that generically moduli field would have started from an amplitude of Planck scale or something like that. And phenomenologists cannot say more than that beyond generic statement. But in string phenomenology, at least we can construct concrete model where a moduli sector and inflation and visible sector are all packed in the same compactification manifold. So at least we can talk about this problem, coupled problem, in a very concrete, based on concrete example, and say, yes, indeed, we have moduli problem, or we might be able to say, actually, that problem doesn't exist. For example, in this context, well, certainly the following the evolution of energy density moduli is very important. But the other important factor is what kind of decay mode is available for the moduli field. What phenomenologists usually assume is that there is some kind of interaction like moduli field coupled to trace F mu nu. Maybe such interaction exists. But what about other interactions? For example, well, maybe there are an interaction like this, where the scalar field couples to vector-like mother fields, for example, in renormalizable coupling, and then the decay rate is much larger, so the cosmological scenario will be totally different. And the other thing that we have to think about is the mixing between different moduli states. Not all of those states have kinetic terms that are quite completely orthogonal, but sometimes those fields may have mixed kinetic terms or mixed interactions, and there may be a mixing between those states. And then the evolution of those the moduli field energy density will be totally different. So I think this is one of the areas where string phenomenology can make a huge, well, at least important progress beyond what phenomenologists have done in effective field theory language.
Would there be a difference between closed-sectional versus open-sectional moduli in terms of which decay proposal is dominant?
In type 2A, 2B, maybe distinction is very clear. But in F-theory, for example, the distinction between open-sector and closed-sector is not very clear. So I don't even know whether that statement is well-defined. The question is whether...
versus complex is clear.
Well, at least if there are renormalizable coupling, then the decay rate is much, much larger, and that would be very safe.
So the first coupling, which is negationally functional, right?
Yes.
You have only one of the two kinds of moduli, which is clear or complex.
Right.
So there's a distinction. What's your first principle is challenging?
And
does this reflect on the CMB spectrum?
Probably BBN constraint is much stronger than CMB constraint.
Yeah, sure.
So if the distortion of the CMB spectrum is going to be a problem, then that will be a much more bigger problem for BBN. So perhaps I didn't answer to your question.
But I was just thinking that these are the natural candidates for curviton, right?
For curviton...
They're frozen during inflation because they're light. They have high-scale inflation.
Right. And then it has to also produce baryon symmetry. That's a constraint.
Sure.
If a couple of criteria are satisfied, then the consequence is all what we know from phenomenology. So I don't think there is much difference between whether we do this in string theory or phenomenology effective field theory approach. But in string theory compactification setup, at least we can talk about consistency between different packages of the scenario. I think that's what we can make a progress in string phenomenology.
So are you talking about the scenario in which there are... So normally when we model inflation string theory, most of the moduli are heavy, and then there's one inflaton or something to be simple, which is light enough and flat enough to give inflation. And in that sense, you just have the inflaton to worry about in terms of... Or are you worrying about a situation where, for some reason, where it's more of like a multi-field inflation scenario or something?
Well, at least what I call...
What I'm saying is that inflation takes place at some high scale, and then at low scale you have these late decaying scalar fields, which alter, partially alter the CMB spectrum.
Well, but if the moduli were just frozen already during inflation, there's no...
That's right. So all the fields whose mass parameters are larger than the Hubble parameter during inflation are not counted as a moduli in this context. So it could be a problem if there are such fields.
Sorry?
It could be a problem if there are such fields whose masses are lower than the Hubble parameter.
But normally it's hard to obtain fields that are lighter, you know, any fields that are lighter than Hubble. That's true. So having the other ones heavier seems natural.
If masses are comparable to Hubble parameter, then that could still be a problem, because the potential minimum during inflation and after inflation could be different by order one. If the mass parameters are much bigger than Hubble parameter, then that's not going to be a problem.
Right. So that's the kind of thing that's been modeled so far.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's the most generic expectation, but it seems like a quick answer to me.
I think so. Any more comments?
I guess I was going to say that, I mean, the scale of inflation is tied up to the scale of this potential only if you model inflation and modular stabilization by the same potential, right? But if you decouple the two things and you can say, you know, my moduli is stabilized by some potential which gives you low scale supersymmetry, blah, 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 and then there is some other potential that drives inflation. So there is this recent paper by Shamik and Alex Westphal and company where they tried to implement this idea. Then there could be some, you could have all these moduli frozen at the high scale. Frozen not because they're stabilized, frozen because they're light, because of the Hubble friction. And then they decay from their, they just start coherent oscillations at the end.
Usually all the fields in this universe are coupled at least through the supergravity, but if there are some ways to make a separation, then that's another possibility. Okay, so roughly a third of this time is already spent. So I think this is a good time to finish this part. And by following the suggestion from Natalia, I guess let me go to this part. Is it okay? So I think perhaps I need to do a little bit of organization, so I'm trying to do that at real time. I do not mean to say that the list that I'm going to talk is the complete list of open problems in F theory. No way, I don't mean it. I only list a couple of problems which is physics oriented rather than the mathematics oriented or string theory oriented. So the physics oriented problems is by no means, physics-oriented problems are not necessarily phenomenological problems. Sometimes, physics-oriented problems require very creative thought in theoretical aspects. So, I not mean that's phenomenological. And certainly, very phenomenological problems will not be, very interesting for most of the audience, I think, in this workshop, I suppose. So, I didn't choose such problems. Actually, I'm not really sure this is the first problem. It's more like a question for me. The first question is about your car couplings. And certainly, if you see, for example, E6 type singularity point or D6 singularity point, which is usually isolated in SE5 divisor, and then at least approximately rank 1 Yukawa matrix is generated at that given Yukawa enhanced singularity point. That's fine. And more other papers have been written about what kind of corrections we should expect. And Well, the correction that have been discussed, one of the types of corrections that have been discussed is something like this. I'm not talking about the overall normalization of the column matrix itself, but I'm talking about the flavor structure in it, so that we can talk only in F-term language. And then correction of this type has been discussed, but some people say that this actually the contribution should cancel. Well, certainly an argument like this may be very powerful in that if this R refers to the volume of the base manifold, or gut divisor, and then it looks like a correction given in this form in the superpotential coupling. That sounds a little suspicious. And so that may be fine. Well, maybe this kind of contributions cancel one another in F-term effective car couplings. This is fine. And other sorts of non-perturbative corrections have been discussed, for example, by Fernando. And
couldn't that be killer potential, actually? If you're talking about physical Yukawa, right? This could be killer potential, you think.
I see. So killer potential may have kinetic mixing, for example. And the kinetic mixings in the killer potential may have correction that is suppressed by this amount. Is it what you're talking about?
Yeah, what I meant is, you know, yeah, in killer potential, the charge matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whose coupling you want to determine, and the moduli come in certain form with effective killer potential for charge matter to have this suppression.
And the other contribution, which may also appear in the superpotential, is this type of corrections to the in F-term. And well, we usually talk of gut divisor and matter curve is like this, this, and that, and this kind of things. And we usually draw this kind of matter curves like a line and surface. But in reality, actually, the ratio between this size and the string scale is not that very large, actually. If the volume of the gut divisor is denoted by R gut the fourth, and base manifold volume is denoted by R six to the sixth, and then, we can use the measured value. Well, it's not measured yet, but expected value of the unified gauge coupling constant. Then this value is roughly expected to be 24 to 25. Here, I just assume that there are no other SE5 complete multiples other than those in MSSM. And we can also use the value of the Planck scale, and then we can also use the rough value of energy scale of the unification, and then we can also determine the ratio between these two length scale. If I take the cubic power of this, and then 0.35 times m got C times 10 to the 16th GeV. So actually, we have to take a fourth root of this, and then this ratio is something like a 2 or 3. It's not that very large number. And we can also say the same thing. Well, this is roughly order 1 parameter if I take the gut scale to be around 10 to the 16th GeV, just like it is expected from the gauge coupling unification. And the constant C is something like a ratio between the apparent energy scale of gauge coupling unification versus the typical. So I think it is something like energy scale of gauge coupling unification expected from one-loop renormalization group running versus the parameter that sets the size of the gut divisor. And then we have to have a constant C, something like this. It could be 1, it could be 2 pi, something like that. So it's not going to be very different from 1 unity. And then this is order 1 quantity once again. And so after we take the a third root of this, and then it's roughly order 1 parameter.
Yeah, I think you're a little bit cavalier here, right? I think one has to be careful about 2π's and all
right.
that. You know, those are order 10 things.
That's right. That's right. That's right. What I call m star to the fourth is, what is that? I think in type 2B language, it is GS LS to the fourth, and LS is that's my definition of LS, and all the factor 2π have been taken into account in this calculation, and also factor 2. So that's the situation, and whether we should take this order 1 nature seriously or not, that's actually up to whether we have to make an estimate of the string scale to be LS or square root of alpha prime. I don't have any definite answer, but certainly that's a little scary. Well, for example, if the stringy scale is really LS, then this ratio is almost order 1. That's a little scary. If the stringy scale, the physics where stringy physics sets in, is actually square root of alpha prime, and then we have a room to breathe of order a factor of 2 times 2π, so that's of order 10. And yet, well, certainly we have this kind of parameter value, and if I use this parameter, and then, well, we usually say that wave functions of charged matter fields are Gaussian in the transverse direction to the matter curves. But there are not much distance between these two curves or two lines or near equal points. And so wave functions also have a tails that go penetrate into the other Yukawa points. And the tail of the wave Gaussian wave functions looks something like this, because the wave function value is distance square, and overall, in the end, this is going to be something like this. So a little bit of a question is whether we should also take account of this kind of contribution or not. And the crucial answer depends on whether we usually say that the Gaussian width of this wave function is like a string scale. But what does that string scale really mean? Is it really like LS, or is it like a square root of alpha prime? It has not been clarified very much in the literature, but certainly it will affect the phenomenology, Yukawa matrix.
But it's something you can clarify, right?
Yes.
A careful job. Right?
Yes, and actually my collaborator and I also did a little bit of discussion. A reference is, 0901 and some numbers, and 0905, and there two these two papers are one of my papers in 2009, January and May. So we did a little bit of discussion, and an interesting thing is that the estimate is somewhere in between LS and alpha square root of alpha prime. That was the result on my side, but that discussion relies to some extent on type 2B intuition. But since this is F theory, so it's a little scary to rely too much on type 2B, so I think there is a room to improve this estimate, I think. That's one of the part of the one first problem, and the other problem that is associated with this is that here with this picture, I just assume that this gut divisor is for SU5 gut model, and then this stuff is going to be 10 representation, this curve is going to be for 5 bar or 5 representation, and then there will be E6 type singularity points there. An interesting thing is that the wave function usually behave in a Gaussian in a transverse direction, but the wave function of the zero mode, charged matter zero modes do not behave in a Gaussian style around this point. But it shows a funny behavior, e to the minus distance to the three halves in power in the exponent. But this profile doesn't look like e to the minus t. So there must be some sort of cancellation so that this tail doesn't really contribute in F-term Yukawa coupling, and yet some tail may still contribute in Yukawa couplings. So I don't know what is going to happen in that situation. And what's more, the wave function profile around this E6 type singularity point has been calculated only in this precise transverse direction in a setup that eventually goes to compactification to 6 dimensions, not to 4 dimensions. solving the partial differential equation has been a little bit too difficult, so that has been the best we have done so far. But there may be something we could done in principle to improve the situation. So that's one thing that I want to mention.
So one naive question. So you're saying that the volume of the force cycle is not that different from the stringing scale or the compactification scale?
Other one. Well, the definition of string scale is a little tricky, though.
So, but isn't F theory, doesn't F theory rely on the supergravity approximation? So that this is perturbative in the volume of the four cycles? I mean, I just want to say that if this, that is not only a problem of the cutoff, right, it's of everything.
That's my question C, actually.
Okay. And second, in this exponential decay that you, I mean, there are several things contributing, right?
Not just for this, but one of the effects is what you pointed out.
No. I mean this wave function, right. The usual one with the Gaussian profile. In the coefficient of the Gaussian, there's this intersection angle and flux on the curves and so on.
That's right.
Okay. So this kind of help.
Well. You're talking about the coefficient in front of this.
No. I'm talking about the usual thing. Okay.
The second question is B. It is about zeta symmetry on God divisor or in F theory compactification. At least when we're talking about supersymmetric compactifications of whatever string theory down to 3+1 dimensions, then since it is supersymmetric theories, we have to say something about dimension 4 problem, decay problem. And well, two or three major ways is first to impose zeta symmetry, so that all the charged matter fields are either classified as Z2 even or Z2 odd, and that eventually becomes R parity, roughly speaking. The other is spontaneous R parity violation. The other is to impose unbroken even symmetry, and there may be something else. If I time is left, then I want to talk about that also. But for now, well, let me talk only about Z2 symmetry scenario. So it is to keep unbroken Z2 symmetry in compactification. So in F theory, we have to impose Z2 symmetry for a combination of Calabi-Yau fourfold and a fourfold flux on it. And that's the scenario. And well, in principle, we could talk about R parity on compact setup, which includes a Calabi-Yau fourfold and fourfold flux on it. But there is an alternative approach which relies on semi-local description of F-theory compactification. So it is not going to be suitable in establishing the existence proof of such a compactification. But in order to derive low-energy consequences, semi-local approach is useful, and for this purpose, at least partially sufficient. And so in this framework, what we do is to consider just a symmetry transformation that acts on the Gato divisor. Since we need to have a Z2 symmetry action on Calabi-Yau fourfold, it should also induce some Z2 transformation on the Gato divisor as well. So we should start from this. And sigma squared is identity. And then, because R parity or matter parity in low-energy effective theory has to be non-R symmetry, actually, that's controversial. Well, that's, well, ironical in name, but it is not R symmetry. And so the two actions should lift to a canonical bundle. And well, this Z2 symmetry action on S-GAT should be lifted to a canonical bundle as a whole, and then by requiring that the Z2 symmetry action on the canonical bundle is SU3 symmetric, it is within SU3 rather than SU4, and then once you determine this Z2 symmetry action on S-GAT, then automatically its action on the canonical bundle is determined. And, well...
What is this SU3 or SU4?
SU4. Well, if I consider in language matter parity rather than R parity and matter parity are different only by fermion parity. And since we always have fermion parity in Lorentz effective theory, we can always consider in matter parity if you're only talking about the Z2 symmetry. And then it is non-R symmetry. So if it is to descend from, well, transformation in internal manifold, and then if it is contained within SO6 or equivalent SU4, then that's R symmetry in general, R symmetry rotation. But if it is contained within the SU3 subgroup of SU4, SO6, then that's non-R. So that's the requirement. And now let me consider sigma fixed point. And since this sigma action on S-gut acts on the surface, its fixed point is either an isolated point or a locus of fixed, a curve of fixed point. So locally, if I find a point around fit, this sigma acts like an inversion of two coordinates, and then this is going to be an isolated fixed point. And the other possibility is a locus of fixed point like this, where locally this Z2 symmetry action sigma sends this point to the other side in only one complex dimension, but not in two complex dimensions. So this is a very generic classification of the sigma fixed points. And what's interesting is about this type of fixed point. Suppose that I find a fixed point of this on a gut divisor S. And then we know that this sigma acts on canonical bundle in such a way that it flips two complex directions. So the fiber direction on the canonical bundle should not flip in order to keep the SU3 rotation. And then the consequence is that if I have a spectral surface like this, for example, let's take a five-fold cover for E8 Higgs bundle, and then, well, we know at this in this situation that this V2 symmetry action does not flip this fiber coordinate of the canonical bundle. So those sections or coefficients that determine the Higgs bundle or the spectral surface should be either Z2 even or Z2 odd at this special fixed point. An interesting thing happened happens when all of them are actually Z2 odd. Nothing interesting happens when they are Z2 even. So when they are Z2 odd, and then it means that all of those coefficients vanish simultaneously at this fixed point. So actually, this is a very generic classification. I just assume R parity to be left in unbroken Lorentz effective theory. And then, well, this is just a classification, but maybe there are fixed points, isolated fixed points in Z2 symmetry action. And then there are only two possibilities left. One is an interesting thing. The other is interesting things, where all of these A0, A2, A3, 4, A4, A5 vanish simultaneously. So this is not what we expect generically in generic complex structure moduli configuration. So this picture actually assumes generic complex structure moduli, and then the matter curve for the 10 representation is given by, I usually use different notation from all other collaboration F theory use. A5 equals to 0 is a matter curve expression for 10 representation. Caltech group usually writes B5 equals 0. Anyway, and the 5 representation curve, matter curve is given by A0, A5 square minus A2, A3, A5 plus A4, A3 square is equal to 0. And this curve usually forms a double point here so that it has a D6 singularity, and it has a normal crossing against the 10 representation matter curve here. And that's what we usually expect. But when A0 also becomes non-zero, and then actually they form a triple point like this. So typical picture is like this. Uh, Because the Matakav defined equation for the five representation is homogeneous of degree 3 in all the 8, 0, 2, 3, 4, 5. So there are three branches of Matakav in five representation, in addition to the Matakav in 10 representation. And this point is something like the E6 type singularity, D6 type singularity, and A6 type singularity all combined and merged into one point. And this is not going to happen generically for generic complex structure moduli quantification for F-theory, but once we impose Z2 symmetry, which is rather realistic assumption for the real world quantification, and then with an extra binary choice, this kind of singularity point appears. And an interesting thing is that, well, in local geometry, actually, we do not have a gauge theory effective or approximate descriptions to determine what kind of matter wave function behavior we should expect or what kind of Yukawa couplings we should expect at this point. Well, normally, well, when we're talking about Yukawa matrix or things like that, around this point and around this point, well, we know that the charged matter fields are described by global Hoffman sections of line bundles and matter curves. But actually, this statement relies on two different justifications. One is to resort to heterotic duality with the heterotic string theory, and the other is to translate Calabi-Yau four-fold geometry into the language of a gauge theory approximation. And both approach actually end up with the same consequence. So that was fine, but in this geometry, we cannot translate Calabi-Yau four-fold local geometry into E8 gauge theory, for example, because A0 is not zero, or B0 is not zero. So perhaps we would not have a gauge theory approximation on 7+1 dimensions in order to describe physics at this local geometry, then what kind of approach we should have? Well,
this is not a Cotirus type singularity.
I think it's not a Cotirus type singularity, and I worry that when you have such a singularity, you'll run into the phenomenon that Diaconescu, Candelas, Rajesh, somebody and I, Floria, uncovered of these codimension 3 singularities that don't have good field theory low energy descriptions. They have some kind of light string in the spectrum. And that's a general phenomenon of F theory models where in codimension 3 you don't have a Cotirus singularity.
A good reference is codimension 3 something paper. To what extent do you think we can uncover the matter wave functions, for example, in this situation? Well, it's not really clear at this moment whether the charged matter fields can be described in terms of sections of line bundles, for example. It could be sheaf. So one of the possibility in studying this physics for this geometry will be to exploit heterotic field duality, do you think?
So, maybe. So we didn't do this model in detail in that paper, but we did a different model in detail, which indeed had a heterotic dual that had not a bundle but a sheaf, and it was the analog of a small instanton singularity, a planck instanton singularity, which you would have seen in two dimensions. Now you were seeing in three dimensions in codimension 3. I don't know exactly if I should predict the same phenomenon for this case, but. I would worry about it. In fact, it might lead me to think that of your two choices, it's the other one.
Maybe. If the physics from here is very bad, and then perhaps we should not choose a geometry with a Z2 action that has all A0, 2, 3, 4, 5 to be odd under that fixed point.
I mean, by the way, for Z2 actions on a surface, those two cases of isolated fixed point and curved fixed point are mutually exclusive, right? Because the local action on a two-form will either be plus or minus, either a plus or minus eigenvalue, plus or minus eigenvalue, and it fixes the two-form in the isolated fixed-point case, and it's anti-invariant in the curved fixed-point case.
Mm.
So it's a qualitative difference between the type of Z2 symmetries on SGUT.
Well, I had an example which is P2. And then, if my memory is correct, there is one isolated fixed point and there is a locus of fixed curve like this.
Yeah,
I don't remember the detail. But anyway, that's the detail, I think. In my opinion, this is not exclusive. Both could be present. Either one of them could be present. None of them could be present, I think. But anyway. Well, for the generic choice of complex structure moduli, to wrap up complex structure moduli, we expect holomorphic sections of line bundles to be the origin of the low energy zero modes. But in such a geometry, it may not be really true. And then we have to find out what are the independent size degrees of freedom and what kind of Yukawa interactions are generated. This geometry, particular geometry, is interesting because in order to obtain realistic CKM matrix, which suggests that up-type Yukawa matrix and down-type Yukawa matrix are somehow aligned, and then if this geometry works, then that's very interesting because if the 10 representation charged matter field is described by wave function, smooth wave functions on 10 representation matter curve, and then the linear combination that becomes non-zero at this point would generate top Yukawa and bottom Yukawa at the same time. But there is no guarantee at this moment from theoretical side that the charged matter fields are described by smooth wave functions or holomorphic sections of a line bundle. So this is interesting things to study, I think.
I think the comment was that there might be other things than just charged matter, feeling that this is a particular point.
That's right.
Tension as strings or nasty objects you don't want to have anyway.
Right.
And that would mean that these are not interesting points.
Maybe. Maybe interesting, maybe totally uninteresting thing, situation, I don't know.
Did you mention the other possibility was not interesting?
Nothing particular happens, that's what I meant. So that could be phenomenological realistic. Though in that situation, we have to say something about how to get, realistic CKM matrix, which is almost diagonal in the first order approximation. So how to get it is a bit of a question in that situation. One of the ideas that I wrote in October last year has an idea how to get realistic CKM matrix, but it predicts after tuning one complex structure parameter that the CKM matrix is something like a permutation matrix. So we still need one of a three factorial fine-tuning or luckiness. So there may be a room to improve that problem. And in that sense, this could be interesting, or maybe this geometry could be totally wrong for phenomenology.
Anyway. Not
it could be.
Because
you were just working on these
fixed points and
then cross points. It could be. None of the isolated or curve-like singular fixed point locus could be there. It could be free reacting.
How does Z2 act on moduli?
Well, if the whole geometry has a Z2 symmetry, moduli will be classified into Z2 even and Z2 odd. That's all I can say.
So if you stabilize all the moduli, then Z2 is broken?
A correct statement is that we have to find a moduli stabilization so that Z2 symmetry remains unbroken to fit the reality. I think that's the way to say, I think, at least for me.
But do you assume that Z2 comes from B3 or just somehow? As soon as just divides inside 3-4, B3.
That's right.
Do you assume Z2 acts on B3 or you just assume it's accidentally only acts on the divisor inside B3?
Because dimension 4 problem decay problem is not that easy, small problem, I would prefer to have Z2 symmetry on Calabia fourfold and flux on it. And then it will descend down to a symmetry on S-gut. It's possible in principle that there is an approximate Z2 symmetry for the gut divisor and its local geometry around it. That's possible. But then we have to to study what kind of braking effects will show up in the Lorentz effect of action, and we have to make an estimate how large dimension 4 Poincaré operators will be generated if the zeta symmetry is not exact.
So if it's acting on the fourfold and you're near a fixed point, how do you expect it to act on the fiber? What would be the action on the elliptic curve? Do you know?
Kind of the fourfold.
Yeah.
Well,
is it a reflection or a translation? Those are the sort of two options, right?
Well, I consider the, well, I would prefer to keep the section.
Right.
For safety, at least.
Right.
And then that would be usually reflection or nothing. And the problem C is, it's about approximation scheme, and that's, in some sense, a question that Fernando already raised. And so, well, using the gauge theory description, including exceptional type E6, E7, E8, in 7 plus 1 dimensions, has been a very powerful tool in studying U-car couplings, in particular in F-theory quantification in the last couple of years. And that's certainly true because, well, originally F-theory was formulated by using Calabi-Yau fourfold, and in particular it has to be a singular geometry. It has codimension, complex codimension 1 singularity, which is not very bad because it's like a PQ7 brain. Its Felix is to some extent possible to be guessed, but then matter curves is like a codimension 2 singularity, and what happens in codimension 3 singularity is really a mess. But the power of the gauge theory description is that we can translate that geometry into the language of gauge theory description on 7 plus 1 dimensions, and yet there was a still remaining question whether we can really use just the gauge theory on flat space-time, or should we actually expect branch cuts and some kind of twisted sector there or not? That was not really an obvious question, but it turns out right at this moment that we can just use ordinary gauge theory, like with the gauge group E6, E7, E8 or whatever, or SO10 locally. And yet, if we use the background properly, and then we can describe F theory, local geometry, in language of the gauge theory. So that's fine, but well, gauge theory description is at best an approximate description. Well, it is based on an intuition, basically, that if D brains intersect in that way, and then we can project this setup into this plane, and then well, this brain configuration can be described by a Higgs field background, which depends on this space directions. That's basically the idea. So, and if the deep brain configuration goes in that way and goes on and on and winding up in geometry, in compact geometry, and then it begins to be a little more and more difficult in how to describe this geometry. And so the gauge theory description, the idea of the gauge theory description is to capture this local geometry and focus on this region, and then this system is described in good approximation by SUM times SUM gauge theory on 7 plus 1 dimensions. That's basically the idea. And so the framework itself is approximate in nature. So the question that I want to pose is, well, if I'm saying that this is an approximation, and then, well, it would be nice to make it a science, how much error should be expected? And what are the parameters that control errors? What kind of expansion we should have? And in what kind of way can we improve the error systematically? I think, well, almost nothing is known in that direction. Well, and there are probably two different...
Can I see if I understand your picture correctly? So you're talking about describing the matter curve in that theory.
Right.
And you're talking about describing it by doing an actual deformation of brains, which would change the gauge group, and then using that as an approximation to the underlying thing. Yes?
Yes, probably.
Okay. I mean, there are other ways of thinking about what the matter curve means and thinking about what the labels of groups mean, which is not that there's an enhanced gauge symmetry, but that the Calabi-Yau fourfold exhibits matter which can be, whose gauge charges can be computed by some geometric construction on the Calabi-Yau fourfold without needing to go to the approximation of a larger gauge group.
Perhaps you're talking about, you're saying that you can just focus on singularity along the matter curve, and then singularity is enhanced.
That's right. Well, singularity along the gauge surface, and then the singularity gets enhanced in some way on the matter curve. And from that enhancement, well, first of all, you can do, if I go down to three dimensions and do an M-theory analysis, I can sort of study the quantization of the wrapped brain objects which give me charged matter. And I can compute their gauge charges by some geometric construction, which agrees with this approximation.
Yes. The next question is, can we compute wave functions and can we compute your car couplings of those charged matter fields?
Right.
And for that purpose, I think the using the gauge theory description has been the most powerful one.
Yeah,
and I think that's the only one, I should not say, perhaps, well, at least in type 2b, string calculation can be used directly. So it's not the only one. But for F-theory context, which involves E-type singularity, perhaps in order to go down to the level of calculating your car couplings, at this moment, using gauge theory description as an approximation is the only feasible way, I think. And the systematic error improvement procedure for that approach has not been known yet, I think. And there are two different kinds of errors, I think, that could hopefully be implemented. So if we focus on this part of the geometry, then we well, and if this consists of just only one D7 brain, or its analog in F theory, and then we can just have SUN plus one gauge theory, that's fine. But if you want to include this part into the approximation, then we might want to have SUN plus two gauge theory effective description, and that would hopefully improve the precision in the calculation. And we might include higher layer of the D7 brains. And in that kind of situation, perhaps we have to include the ramified 7 brain, and we have to encode it into the gauge theory background and Higgs field background. But to some extent, I think that's doable. So the question at this moment is, what kind of error estimate we should expect when we truncate higher order layer? And what is the parameter that controls this error, and what can be used as the expansion parameter? I have no idea how to do that. And perhaps what is needed in that situation is to solve, for example, the Dirac zero model wave function of multi-component field, like, for example, SC2 doublet zero mode needs to be solved under this doublet background. And what is the size of the value of the wave functions in upper component and lower component? And that will give us an estimate of what kind of error we should expect. What are the parameters that control this situation? But I don't have an explicit solution for the zero mode. To some extent, I think that's doable, at least in quantification to six dimensions, not four dimensions. Quantification to four dimensions is really difficult, but at least for around the E6 type singularity point, the doublet gauge field background is known, and I think the zero model solution wave function has also been determined, I think, a paper in October last year from my group has an appendix that discusses such issues. So that part can be used as a reference. And so that's a possible way to go. There may be a lot of room to improve in that direction. And the other thing is to go beyond gauge theory. After we exploit this layer of two cycles about in F-theory quantification, and if you go to the level of the E8, and yet there will be other parts of the geometry within Calabi-Yau, compact Calabi-Yau fourfold. But the gauge theory using E-series, E6, E7, E8 cannot go beyond that. So how can we improve that, the geometry that that is ahead of that, well, a two change of two cycles? That's one of the questions. And the other question is directly related to the question that Fernando raised. Well, how can we implement stringy corrections? Well, probably it's not proper to say it's stringy because F theory is not strictly stringy theory. At least it has to involve something like M2 brains in M theory language. So it's not purely string, but how can we describe that kind of phenomenon? One possible way to go is, well, to add an extra term in effectable action in 7 plus 1 dimensions. Well, we would usually start with this leading order term for the Amide theory with a certain gauge group for this part. And, well, Beasley-Heckman-Buffer's first paper, I think that was first paper, determined by supersymmetry transformation of this leading order term what kind of other terms we should expect. And then they derived the auxiliary field and BPS conditions and things like that. But what they did is a supersymmetry transformation of this, and the basic idea, I think, is that this term can be followed by some power of M star string scale to some power with higher derivative terms and all other terms. And so this term should be regarded as only at the leading order term in the at least the M star expansion. So some of these effects could be implemented as in higher order terms, and then well at least well some structure of this next leading order terms could be guessed to some extent by exploiting duality with the type 2B or M theory or possibly with the heterodic string theory. So I think to some extent that's doable. I'm not really sure whether that's really completely doable. But anyway, to some extent some efforts could be made, I think. And then in principle we can go on to study what kind of well, effects we should expect from the next leading order term. Maybe the matter wave function is distorted, and then that will be reflected into the estimate of the Yukawa couplings, and then what kind of errors we should expect from the M star corrections in higher order. That's something. Well, if you want to make this field as a real toward the real science with the better and better precision, then I think that's one of the things we should eventually think about.
If you were in type 2B, there would be alpha prime corrections you're talking about?
I think so. In type 2B, we have alpha prime correction and G star correction.
Yeah, but the alpha prime corrections
are sorry, GS.
To change physical potential instead of homomorphic decouplers.
That's right. So maybe that's safe. I don't know.
Is there any way to compute the Taylor metric for the charged matter fields?
Well,
you need that for normalization, right?
That's right. That's right. And we also have to think about the kinetic mixing part, and that may also give rise to the flavor mixing in the real Yukawa coupling. So that's important. One possible thing to do is to do just a dimensional reduction of this Yamu theory. That's a first order approximation. So, for example, we can capture this geometry, and then we know that how to encode the Calabi-Yau forward background geometry into the language of Higgs-Webb and gauge field configuration on it. And then we can determine the zero model wave functions in gauge theory language. And then we can just plug in this wave function in separation of variable format, wave function depending on the internal coordinate and the fluctuations depending on the 3 plus 1 dimension Minkowski space. And we just plug them in the 7 plus 1 dimension action and do the dimension reduction. And then we can get the form of the kinetic Taylor potential.
So you would have to know the, I guess you would have to know the Calabi-Yau metric to do that, right?
I think so. And let me go to D. And this question or problem D is related to the paper that actually came out last week with my collaborators and I. And it is to think about an alternative scenario to this. Dimension 4 problem decay problem has a couple of solutions, at least in FCA language. One is to impose Z2 symmetry in Calabi-Yau fourfold and flux on it. The other is to keep an unbroken U1, which eventually is something like it, considering SO10 gut or SU6 gut in gut divisor. And the fourth one is the spontaneous R parity violation, which I'm going to talk about next as a question E. And the third one is the factorized spectral surface scenario. It originally came from an idea that we just have to take a reducible limit of the matter curve in the phi representation on the gut divisor. I think that idea was written in the paper, second paper of Beasley, Heckman, Waffer. And so, although I erased, I had a cubic polynomial for the phi representation matter curve on the gut divisor. And the idea is that you just have to take a limit of the complex structure moduli so that the curve goes to a reducible limit, and the single irreducible curve becomes the split two irreducible curves. That was the idea, but actually it doesn't really work for phenomenology, because we can just look at the geometry. This is a picture of S-gut once again, and then the original idea is to think about this situation. This is a matter curve for the 10 representation, and this is a matter curve for 5 matter, and this is a curve for 5 Higgs. And then, these two groups of matter fields are localized in different curves, and so they can be identified as different fields. But the problem arises at this type of intersection point, and we know the local defining equation of Calabi-Yau fourfold, and that's where we are supposed to start, and we have to start everything from there in principle. And then we can translate the local geometry into the language of gauge theory description, and then it turns out that the local gauge theory in that region is not SU7. It's not, well, although it looks like there are two different branches of matter curve, so that we might expect two layers of 7 brains coming onto the gut divisor, but actually it was not the case. This situation is like we have 5 stack of D7 brains for SU5 unification, and there is an extra D7 brain coming in that area. In that way, I'm not really sure whether I'm good at drawing a picture. But this is a picture of a typical saddle point. So if I take an intersection between this zero locus and this D7 brain, and then intersection curve looks like that. And it looks like a two intersection, D7, D7 intersection meets here, but actually the an extra D7 brain is just there is one extra D7 brain. So it is actually SU6 gauge theory, and the matter wave functions on this branch and on this branch are exactly equal at this point. So what we really need to do is to split the spectral surface rather than a matter curve, and that's why this scenario should be called a factorized spectral surface. But the factorized spectral surface idea still has a theoretical concern, and I'm not going to talk about that detail of that paper in less than 15 minutes. And so detail is basically written, everything is written in that paper. And that paper concludes that even after we're imposing the factorization limit of the spectral surface, and yet it is not possible to make a clear separation between these two matter fields on different irreducible copies of matter curves. So, and there are a couple of loopholes in that argument. So one way to go is to exploit that loopholes. And one is... But at this moment, all the solutions within that factorized spectral surface scenario looks like a fine-tuning of the complex structure moduli. I'm not really sure, but at this moment, it looks like that. So one way to go is to explain that fine-tuning in terms of flux compactification, but I have no idea how to do that, or I didn't have a good prospect in doing it. And the other thing that we can do at this in this scenario is to make an estimate of how large dimension 4 problem decay operators are generated. But that problem is not simple within the gauge theory, because it has to, it is relevant to an effect that goes beyond the EEH gauge theory approximation. The factorized spectral surface scenario is well formulated precisely in EEH gauge theory language in 7 plus 1 dimensions. There is nothing wrong within that level of analysis. But the R-party violating couplings is likely to be generated from the effect that goes beyond the EEH approximation. So how can we calculate that problem? And so probably the most likely way to do this is to exploit the duality with the heterotic string once again, or maybe the duality with M theory. I don't know which procedure is more effective, I don't know. But anyway, that's one of the way to go. And in that way, perhaps we might be able to make an estimate how large dimension 4 proton decay operators are generated, and then that will tell us how much the complex structure moduli parameters have to be tuned to get this scenario work. So this is not just an easy problem within a framework that has already been established, but we have to establish a formulation for the calculation itself. So that's an interesting problem, at least problem as interesting as a problem. Well, whether one likes that scenario or not, that's another question. But anyway, and let me go on to the last problem, and because I have 10 minutes more left.
How
is
the spectral surface split into
SU4 plus 1,
or?
Could be 4 plus 1, 3 plus
2. You're analyzing all different.
Well, what I did is actually to make a problem a little easier. And I used a breaking of EH to E6, and I considered 2 plus 1 factorization.
Okay.
Probably the essence will not be totally different from that when it's applied to the breaking of EH to SU5, but I didn't confirm that detail. And the other possibility is not just a 4 plus 1 or 3 plus 2 factorization, but some people would consider a more reduced monogeny group of two cycles, like Z4 rather than S4. And so I have nothing to say what kind of effect we should expect in that situation.
What do you mean by fine-tuning of complex structure? I mean, would you also call it the fine-tuning of complex structure to get E6 in the first place? You always have to tune the complex structures to get something.
That's right. So whether we need a... Well, I was about to say whether we should impose beyond the minimal fine-tuning or not, but it doesn't make sense. Because if you want to fine-tune the complex structure moduli to get to remove dimension 4 proton decay in certain direction, that would be the definition of the minimal fine-tuning. So what I'm saying doesn't make sense.
I mean, if one had a way of stabilizing all moduli, fine-tuning of complex structure would no longer be an issue.
That's right.
You know, you would have some discrete set of things you're allowed to do, which are the stable points, and that's it.
Right? That's right. So whether that stabilized point of the complex structure moduli is realistic or not, that's the question in that era.
Right, and choosing a very particular point in complex structure moduli, although it looks like fine-tuning from the point of view of continuous moduli, if you had a moduli stabilization, it's either stable or not, so there's not really a fine-tuning question, I think.
I agree. 100% agree.
Well, they can be very finely spaced. What John Raphael called the screeching possibility.
Yeah.
It's hard to
justify
picking one of them.
Well, then it's not fine-tuning anyway, because you have the discrete one. Everything is in principle possible.
So at that point, that would be a question of genericity, I guess. But genericity on natural, intuition based on natural and generic is usually betrayed, so I don't know. And the last question is about the spontaneous R-party violation. From the perspective of phenomenologists, it's much safer to resort to symmetry argument to get rid of dimension 4 proton decay operator. So natural strategy for phenomenologists is either to impose Z2 symmetry like R-parity, meta-parity, or to keep an unbroken even symmetry, or, it's spontaneous symmetry breakdown. So spontaneous R-parity violation scenario usually exploits an unbroken, you want symmetry at some level at high energy, and it could be broken spontaneously, possibly by finite impulse parameters. And that scenario can be implemented in principle in heterodic string theory. In heterodic string theory, it corresponds to considering a vector bundle that is given by extension structure. Like this, and then usually the matter field in this coming from this vector bundle is given by this first cohomology of this vector bundle. But if we have this particular structure in the vector bundle, and then there is a well-defined subspace, in this matter field. So, for example, if this idea is applied to the five bar representation field, and then we need to have some kind of distinction between down-type X-mart spread and lepton doublet, and that's the key in making distinction between dimension 4 Poincaré operators and down-type Picard couplings. So that's the problem, and well, the R parity is to impose a Z2 symmetry so that this vector space is split into Z2 even part and Z2 odd part. That's one way to go. The other way to go is to arrange the geometry in such a way that there is a well-defined marked subspace in it. Now, and actually, this scenario is also known to work in phenomenology. But this is a scenario of R parity violation, and so some R parity violating effect will appear in Lorentz effective theory, and I'm going to talk about that later on. And this is the configuration in heterodic, the translation into the heterodic string language. And the if the spontaneous R parity violation scenario is translated into F theory language, and then it is to consider the same extension structure, but not for vector bundle, but for Higgs bundle. And that's basically it. There are still a couple more things to be clarified. We have discussed this scenario in F-theory quantification in a paper in May last year in section 4.4, but it is a little bit incomplete, and there are much more things to be, well, at least refined and polished, at least from mathematical perspectives, I think. But I'm talking about the open problems in physics, so I'm not going to talk about that. And a bigger problem is in actually M-theory quantification. Well, M-theory can also have E-type ALE vibration space in G2 Holmium quantification, so it can generate up-type Picard couplings, and that's equally motivated like heterodic and F-theory quantifications. And actually, we also talked about that in an old paper with Radu in 2006, but we went only to the stage of, well, discussing the reduced monodromy group for two cycles in ALE, but we didn't discuss how to implement spontaneous R parity violation, how to break the U1 symmetry spontaneously. Perhaps it is going to be a problem of describing the geometry of ALE fibration of the three cycle in certain way, deformed in certain way, but we didn't go that far at that time. So actually, for M-theory part, what kind of geometry corresponds to the spontaneous R parity violation is not known yet, to my knowledge. So that's one thing. It is not strictly in F-theory, but anyway, that's not a problem. But this is about the formulation question. But for phenomenologists, it is not interesting if we only end up with formulation. If we are only to translate what we know from Lorentz physics to the language of string theory, that's not very exciting for phenomenologists. But actually, there is a very well-motivated, important problem that is relevant in Lorentz effective theory in spontaneous R parity violation. In R parity scenario, actually, we'd not have much to expect. We not have so many things to derive from string theory to Lorentz effective theory. Once we impose Z2 symmetry, and then that's it. A difficult problem is to find the geometry so that all the matter fields are given the right R parity assignment. That's very difficult. But its consequence, impact to Lorentz physics is not very, very large. But in R parity violation, there is a very important parameter that has to be estimated by using string theory. And this is it. Certainly we have implemented some source of R parity evaluation in geometry, in quantification, so it should show up somewhere in Lorentz effective theory. And the question is how. Two important parts, well, actually one of them turns out to be not important, But one important thing, apparently important thing, is a kinetic mixing between fiber matter field and fiber Higgs field. Because the R parity is broken at least at high energy scale, and at least at the geometry level of quantification, so those fields have mixed matter well, mass terms and kinetic terms, and they show up in the loops in diagrams. So if you take the Lorentz effect of action, and if you look at the Keller potential, then there will be some effects of that R parity violation, even in Lorentz effective theory. And one of the places where we would expect this is this kinetic mixing between downtime Higgs particle and lepton doublet. But actually, this term turns out not to be harmful in phenomenology. Actually, this effect can be erased away by redefining the Lorentz fields. I'm not explaining that detail, but all the logic relevant there is written in my paper in 2008, February, with two collaborators. I think it appeared in HEPPH. But the other important effect is this. This is a holomorphic part in Keller potential. And, it might sound a little bit nonsense to say that a holomorphic part of the Keller potential is generated, and that's important in physics. But, well, certainly this holomorphic contribution to the Keller potential is not important in rigid supersymmetry level, but they are indeed relevant in supergravity level. Once we have this coupling with a coefficient C, which has to be dimensionless, and then it eventually generates C times gravitational mass times 5 bar matter and 5H. Or to be more realistic, it should be written like lepton doublet times uptype Higgs particle. So the question is how large this coefficient C is going to be. And all the Kautz-Klein particles with a mixed R parity with violation mass terms and kinetic terms would contribute to this one-loop level corrections to the Keller potential. So it is almost hopeless to calculate this coupling constant precisely. So that's not the most important part, but the crucial part is to make an estimate whether this coupling constant is divergent at the Kautz-Klein level or divergent at the string scale level. Eventually, that loop effect will be cut off at the string scale, so that's for sure. Or otherwise, well, the most attractive part of the string theory is somehow gone. But so it will be the divergence property will be tamed at some point. But where? That's the question. Whether that amplitude is cut off at the string scale or Kautz-Klein scale, that makes a crucial difference in the estimation of this parameter. And the phenomenological limit on this coupling is something like a 10 to the minus 5 times mu parameter of the MSSM. That's the phenomenology constraint. It comes from a neutrino mass constraint. And if you want to impose an extra condition coming from cosmology, that baryon symmetry should not be washed out by this lepton number violating interaction before the electric symmetry breaking. And then I think this coupling, this limit will go to 10 to the minus 6 to 10 to the minus 7. So that's the constraint. Certainly, we have one-loop correction, one-loop suppression factor in this contribution to the coefficient C. So there is a good reason to believe that there is a little bit of a suppression. And certainly, this interaction needs to involve three-point functions. So overlapping wave functions are also involved. So there are some reasons to believe that there are some suppression factors. But the question is whether we can expect 10 to the minus 5 suppression or 10 to the minus 6 or minus 7 suppression. Certainly going to gauge mediation is one of the possibilities because gravitational mass goes down. But if you stick to the scenario of anomaly mediation, for example, or gravity mediation, then whether we can achieve this constraint or not, that's a well-defined question. And this paper did an estimate for in the context of weakly coupled heterotic string theory. And because this paper appeared just before the Beasley, Heckman, Buffer, and Donaghy van Holt started F theory business, so we didn't have enough theoretical techniques to study what kind of estimate for this coupling C is going to be in F theory context back then. But now I think we have almost all the techniques available, so I think it is a good time to make an estimate what is going to happen in F theory quantifications. And so that's open questions, and I think time is up.
Thank you very much. couple of questions or comments? Are there more?
So in the first case, what happens to the hours once you rotate this?
A little bit modified.
But
no.
Once, we don't care much.
If the coefficients there is something like this, then that's not very important.
So, no further questions, then thank you again. So we're going to talk at 2, not from the workshop, but at the physics.